Is your mic?
Oh, there we are. Are we on? I don't see anything on the screen. Yeah, I can hear myself too. Okay. All right. Good evening. This is the November meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. I'd like to welcome everybody who's here. First order of business will be the approval of the minutes from our last meeting. Are there any changes or additions to those minutes as they were published? There being none, then I think we can accept the minutes as written. Thank you very much. Next is public comment. This is the time when anybody who wants to make a comment to the Health Commission may come forward. You have 3 minutes, and you may address any subject that is not on our agenda. So, do we have any public comment?
I don't think this is on the agenda because we looked.
Oh, good. Okay. Welcome, and please state your name.
My name is Pam Dunlap. I live on the Napomo Mesa, downwind of the Oceano Dunes. This is my third time here this year regarding this issue. Today I'm going to show you some pictures. Let's see which way goes the right way here. First thing is a chart. Okay. Let's see if I can zoom in a little. This is the PM10 measurements for September 20th, 2010 at the Arroyo Grande Willow Road site, which is the old CDF site in the study. This isn't as clear as I'd like, but the green line right here is the state standard, 50 micrograms per cubic meter. The red line is the federal standard, 150 micrograms per cubic meter. And the purple line is 300 micrograms per cubic meter according to the Air Resources Board directions everyone needs to be inside. This is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. when the kids are in school, the golfers are golfing, the gardeners are gardening, and everybody's out and about. It starts out at 339 micrograms per cubic meter and goes up to 560. This is off the charts, actually. And this is, I can say it's sort of unusual, but it's not unheard of. We're experiencing extremely high values on some days. And I thought I'd show you. This is a view of the dunes from the mesa. You can see the dunes, and you barely can see the oops, that went off. You can barely see the. The ocean. In fact, I could just say you can't see the ocean. You really can't see the ocean now. Wonder why that's not working. Okay. It is on your screen? Okay, then I don't care about my screen. So you can see that. This was taken at 12:30 p.m. on the day that I started taking these pictures. I have a whole series. I didn't. This was taken at 5:30 p.m. This is particulate. It was not foggy that day. It was not smoggy that day. This is particulate, and we see this all the time. Actually, particulate is pretty hard to see, but when it gets so heavy, it becomes a little bit. This is looking due west. This is looking northwest from the mesa. This was on, let me just make sure, June 20th. 2010 at 8 o'clock. This was June 19th at 8 o'clock in the evening. And this is particulate. It just happened that the sun caught this at the right time, and so I took a picture of it, and this is what we're breathing up there. And so we want to make you aware there are three of us. We're the only place on the California coast that has a particulate matter problem from windblown sand. And this shows it. This is the Air Resources Board website and a map that they provide. And if anybody's interested, I can get more information to you. We belong to a group. There are two other members of the group tonight that want to speak. And thank you so much for all you do to help us.
Thank you. Hi, the speaker works too. Hello, my name is Rochelle Todi. I also live on the Napomo Mesa. I've lived there about 18 months. And My first introduction to the particulate matter issue occurred when I saw a newspaper article, September of 2009, where Dr. Melanie Marty came and spoke to your group, and hopefully most of you were here at that time, talking about the particulate levels on the Mesa and the adverse health impacts that has. Since that time, of course, the APCD has come out with a second study, and your group has sent a letter to the Board of Supervisors asking that they do everything they can to mitigate the particulate matter, which, of course, I appreciate. But I think that a lot more could be done by the board, by the APCD, and by the Health Commission. I've sent letters to the Board of Supervisors and the APCD requesting more monitors on the Mesa because at present we have two, and one is near Guadalupe Road and so close to Black Lake and still probably 3 miles away from Trilogy. The other one's at the CDF site. I live near Calendar Road and Highway 1, so I'm on the front edge of the Mesa, and my neighborhood gets blanketed with these particles, and as I think Pam explained, 150 micrograms is the federal limit, not the state limit, the federal limit. And on that chart, we had readings of 500 plus. So the readings are three times the federal limit. And people are out walking in this. Children are playing in this. The schools have not been advised or flying flags. There's no ongoing communication right now, which certainly after a year, you would expect that. I would request that the Health Commission support the request for more monitors on the Mesa. Certainly, I think there should be one by the Lopez High School, by the Mesa Middle School, and in Oceano, where you've had a lot of people from Oceano complaining about their particulate levels. I also think that the Health Commission could do a mailing to the Oceano and Mesa residents. We've got about a three-month time frame now when there's not going to be a lot of high winds. So that's plenty of time to develop a mailing to advise, as you said in your minutes from March 8th, so that people who live there know about this study and know what the risk is from the particulate matter. And I would add that you should advise them how to protect themselves from the particulate matter. And not everyone checks
Thank
the air
you.
Pollution control districts.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Anyway, mailing and monitors.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Arlene Versa. As you heard, I too live on the Mesa. I'm part of a group of concerned citizens who that includes people from Black Lake, Trilogy, Cypress Ridge, Knollwood Estates, and Bayview Estates. And so this concern is really quite broad across the Mesa. First of all, I want to thank you so much for the support your motions demonstrated on March 8th at your meetings, where you did make some recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. And I honestly believe that if the Board of Supervisors were to take your recommendations, it would make a significant positive difference in responding to the issue that we are facing. So that kind of leads me, and I'm going to plead a little ignorance here. I don't know what your process is. I don't know, once you make a recommendation such as you did to the board, what follow-up there is with the board if they don't respond, or how you communicate if they do respond and all that. But we need your help, and your recommendations are great. I'm just wondering if more can be done in terms of following up on them. So that's the question. I guess it's a generic question because we're not having a give and take tonight. I also am here to ask you regarding the notification of residents. That's really key here. Until we can resolve the issue, then I think we have a real need to protect the young and the old and those who have health risks from the high winds and the particulate spikes that Pam showed you on her chart. One way to do that would be to have the Tribune print in their weather section some warnings having to do with those days where they do anticipate having those levels be increased. And they do know that. I get a daily email from the Air Pollution Control District that tells me 4 days in advance what those numbers are going to be. with some protective recommendations. Unfortunately, those protective recommendations only go to the people who sign up for this email, and I'd love to see it in the Tribune. In approaching the Tribune, they said they could do it, but they wanted $18,000, which, of course, we just don't have as pocket money. So I guess one of the things that I would ask that you can perhaps think about is to encourage the Tribune, or to find out if the Board of Supervisors, through your recommendation, could ask the Tribune to adopt something like that as a warning system for the people who are at risk. Thank you for your time, and thank you for all you're doing, and please continue to help us because we need you. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any comments from the commissioners or questions? Commissioner Ann?
Oh, I just thought I'd clarify that the Health Commission is advisory to the Board of Supervisors, and so we advised them of what our recommendation was that we voted on that evening. We have no budget, so we wouldn't be able to do a mailing. And, you know, as far as the Tribune's concerned, they're a private business. They kind of can decide. All we can say is we think that's a nice idea, you know. And
well, that would be helpful.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Williams?
Have you considered contacting the weather persons at the TV stations? It could be it should be included as part of the weather report.
Dr. Borenstein?
Yes, hi. I'm glad that folks came out tonight to bring this issue up. I had spoken to Chairman Garino about being true to my our retreat agenda, and I said I would give a quarterly update on the dunes issue, and that is going to be part of my report tonight. I can directly respond to some of the questions. I don't know if you'd like me to do it at this time or wait for my report. Your call.
I think it would be good for you to go ahead if you'd like to.
Okay. So there has been quite a bit of activity taking place in response to the study. I think as many of the public know that one outcome that was approved by State Parks, the Board of Supervisors, and the Air Pollution Control District was to establish these two committees, the MOC, the Management Oversight Committee, of which I'm a member, and the TAC, Technical Advisory Committee. The work that has been done by those groups in the recent past, over the last few weeks, has been to identify a list of subject matter experts, and interviews have taken place of a number of those individuals, and the county is preparing to issue a contract to a couple of different individuals that can work together with the TAC in developing pilot projects for the mitigation plan. The plan is still very much an effort to get something on the ground in terms of those pilot projects by the windy season in March, and that group is working very hard to try to make that happen. It helps now that a state budget has been passed so that the state can hopefully contribute to the ongoing effort of development of the particulate matter reduction plan as well as support of the pilot projects. With respect, I would say that I share Pam's alarm at the data that she showed for September 20th. I was aware of that date as well as a few others where there have been very high rates recorded on an hourly basis. I just also want to be clear when we talk about being threefold above the federal standard, that one of the technical difficulties in knowing what the health impacts are is that those standards are based on a 24-hour average. And so, indeed, reasonable people would think when you get to a level, even if it's only for 1 hour or 4 hours, that's that high, that there may well be a health impact. But what we do know about particulate matter is it tends to be a cumulative effect, and there isn't really good data to respond to an hour-by-hour recording. Nonetheless, Public Health Department and the APCD have been working hard on developing just the kind of messages that these ladies have been asking for. We are working with the schools in the area. We have a meeting. We're going to be meeting this month, possibly as soon as next week, to talk about a flag program and recommendations for any restrictions when we do have those kinds of very high forecasts. We, APCD has been working hard with Tribune and other media outlets to get those kind of forecasts out publicly. With the Tribune, I know that one of the issues is that they get their weather maps nationally, and that has something to do with the cost, but I haven't been intimately involved in that aspect of things, but I know that there are ongoing efforts, and I believe that one of the television stations is working with APCD to have a daily report. We are preparing very soon. We're going to send out a health alert to all the South County medical providers just to put this in their consciousness. Those are the items that I wrote down. But, I just want to reiterate that Public Health Department is taking the matter very seriously. We're working in conjunction with APCD, and also as I am personally involved in holding the commitments of the agreement between the three entities to our obligations. So I guess that's what I'd like to offer at this point as to where we are.
Thank you. Any questions from commissioners? Okay. Thank you, and we'll look forward to hearing more about that. Next on the agenda is our special presentation tonight, and it's the overview of the obesity prevention efforts in San Luis Obispo County. We have Kathleen Carl. Thank you.
Hi, Sue. Thanks for having me here today. Hello, everyone. So I'm here today to talk about the Childhood Obesity Prevention Program. I checked my notes, and I was actually here about a year and a half ago. Lynn was actually on the task force in 2006 that was formed by the Board of Supervisors when they looked at the issue of childhood obesity in the community. And Lynn and I were talking before we started today, and she can't believe all the things we've accomplished since then, and we have come a long way. Our recent goals and projects, I'm going to talk to you about four different things. First of all, rethink your drink presentations. And I brought you all a little gift tonight that says rethink your drink, and we'll talk to you about what that means. It's a water bottle for you. We're going to talk about school wellness. TCE stands for the California Endowment, and it's a large grant we received, which just ended last week. We did some pilot projects under the California Endowment grant that I'm going to talk to you about. And then we had an obesity summit on October 22nd. Don was there, and Sue was there, and Ed was there. So hopefully I won't repeat too much of what you learned that day, but we're going to talk about what happened at the obesity summit. I also brought you a little packet of seeds, and those seeds were donated courtesy of the Seed Exchange, and we gave them to all participants at the conference. And the seeds are, you can start your own salad bowl mix when you go home. So I'll check back with you in a few months and see how many of you have salads. First, Rethink Your Drink. Rethink Your Drink is an educational presentation that our health educator, Vanessa Stringham, has done in the community this past year. So far, she's made 93 presentations to over 1,500 people. That includes preschools up to their parents, parent groups, elementary schools. So there's been a lot of work on Rethink Your Drink. This summer, we collaborated with the Y, and all kids in the Y summer program took a soda-free summer challenge. And the kids were given parties and recognition for going all summer without drinking a soda. And our plans are to expand this program to Cal Poly this year because we know that a lot of the sugary beverages are being consumed by older kids. The preschoolers are, you know, the juices and stuff are what they're drinking, but we get into the sodas when we get to older kids. First of all, why focus on sugar-sweetened beverages? Sugar-sweetened beverages are the primary source of sugar in the U.S. diet. They're consumed in massive quantities, clearly linked to obesity and diabetes, and there's no nutritional benefits. It also relates to cavities. It's a primary source of dental caries or cavities in children, and it's the food product that is most marketed to children. When Vanessa goes out, what she does is she teaches kids to read food labels, and she shows them all the different ways that sugar is hidden in a food label. It's not just sugar. It could be sucrose or maple syrup or dextrose or molasses or honey, etc. So she educates the kids to become sophisticated when they're reading labels. The other thing she does is she teaches them how, you know, if you read a food label, it says grams of sugar. Well, nobody knows what that means. You know, what is a gram of sugar? So she teaches them how to convert a gram of sugar to a teaspoon of sugar, and then she shows them how many sugar cubes, which a sugar cube is one teaspoon of sugar, how many sugar cubes are in each of these different beverages. Most of us would not sit down and eat 17 sugar cubes at one setting, but many of us would not think twice before drinking a 12-ounce soda or a, you know, 16-ounce soda. And so she's trying to educate the kids to be better consumers. The other thing we've been focusing on in the past 2 years is a school wellness grant. We targeted two schools and two needy, low-income areas with high rates of obesity. And the two areas were San Miguel and Oceano. My colleague and friend Ann McDermott from Cal Poly is going to talk to you about some of the research that she did. So I'm going to leave most of that to Ann, but I'm just going to mention a few things. One of the things that happened in San Miguel was they got a group together called the Healthy Hornets. The Healthy Hornets are a group of 7th and 8th grade kids that became mentors to the younger children. At the Obesity Summit, we honored these kids, and one of the things we said is, do you remember when you were a young kid how you looked up to the older kids on the playground? Well, these 7th and 8th grade kids have a lot more power over the younger kids than an adult does, and so they role model appropriate behaviors. They teach them how to proper exercise form. We taught them the Rethink Your Drink presentations, and now they're going out and teaching them to the younger children. So they're a wonderful group of kids, and we honored them at the Obesity Summit, gave them an award for mentoring, and we also honored the three women who mentored them. The other thing that happened at San Miguel was a program called Soils to Succulent Flavors, and it's really a garden-based learning program. And I've got a short segment to show you, if they can get it ready.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Miller, and I'm in the 7th grade at William Larson Elementary. Today, we're going to be out back in the garden with Miss Wilkinson for our ag class.
Farm to School is a program that connects us to where our food comes from. By serving us healthy, locally grown meals and giving us hands-on education opportunities, it helps make lasting changes in our school's food environment. Farm to School programs teaches the important link between community, being healthy, and eating nutritious, locally grown food.
We are going to be learning about the major nutrients plants need. Ms. Wilkinson tells us that if we grow food in healthy soil, that the food will be healthy for us to eat.
How many nutrients that a plant needs in order to grow?
8.
No.
17. 17 nutrients a plant needs. Hey.
My name's Christina Wilkinson. I'm a teacher at Lillian Larson School in San Miguel, California. I started my agriculture program, which included the garden, 10 years ago. That produce that we harvest will go to the cafeteria salad bar, and it will also be used for after school garden to table, where we'll be talking about the nutrients of whatever vegetable we choose to pick. We'll taste it in the raw form, we'll taste it in a cooked form, and we'll taste it in a recipe.
The success of the garden program at this school is what is allowing us to leverage a bigger farm-to-school program. So having Christina and the garden and the after-school tasting program and cooking program in place was a real benefit.
Alyssa? It helps the plants grow properly, and it keeps them alive for longer than they would without it, without the nutrients in the soil.
Okay, so I think what we're going to do is just go like that and put them that close.
Okay.
Students are real excited about telling others out in the community about what they've eaten, what they've tasted, what they've grown.
Today I planted parsley and onions next to each other because they're companion plants.
I don't think there's any substitute to see the excitement of a child that's tasting a freshly picked, locally grown fruit or vegetable and how that translates into eating healthy food and leading healthy lives.
San Miguel was actually chosen as one of the schools in the state to highlight their garden-to-school, garden-to-table program, so it was a big success for them. We also did some work at Oceano Elementary, and I'm going to, again, let Anne address most of what went on there, but I want to tell you about two things. The pictures are a little dark. Two things were really exciting that happened at Oceano. The first one was when we first went down there and started working, one of the complaints of the cafeteria people were that there was a salad bar, but kids threw most of it away. So the idea was how to get them to take the food, but then eat it. And many Hispanic families like something called chili con limón. It's a chili-flavored spice that they sprinkle on their vegetables, and that's how they eat many of their vegetables at home. And so we started working with the food service people, and Vanessa and the grant coordinator started investigating where we could purchase this powder. A lot of the powder they found, however, had very high sodium content, so they decided to make their own. And they came up with this recipe where they were mixing chili powder and some different spices together, so it tasted okay, but it didn't have a real high sodium content. And they noticed by putting it on the salad bar, consumption of fruits and vegetables went up significantly. So it was a big success. The other thing that happened was there was a principal there, really great guy. He left this last year, but one of the things he said was that you could serve the best food in the world at the school cafeteria, but the kids brought hot Cheetos to school. I mean, they packed them in their backpacks. So he made an official rule that he banned hot Cheetos at Oceano Elementary. And of course, he had some parents upset with him for a while, but it worked. And so that's their rule that they made, no hot Cheetos at school. Now, that doesn't prevent anyone from eating them at home, but at least you've reduced consumption if you've banned them on the school grounds. So both of those things were kind of interesting twists on school wellness, but they were both they both took place at Oceano Elementary. Our plan for the coming year is we don't have a grant anymore, of course, And it really, a lot of the work at the elementary school takes a person to coordinate this effort. But Vanessa, our educator, and Dana, our dietitian, and myself are going to try and find another school that would be willing to try and implement some of the things that happen at these two schools. And there are some things you can do that don't take any money. It just takes some work to do. So our goal is to try and expand the school wellness work we've done to another school in the coming year. We also had some pilot project money in this grant. And one of the things we realized was up in San Miguel, San Miguel did a great job of getting the kids involved in the program, and the teachers were fairly engaged, but the parents were not engaged. So what we decided to do was to reach out to the Latino parents and do a series of education classes in San Miguel. So we went up there and we did some classes from April to May of this year. There was a series of classes. We had raffle drawings. It was gift certificates for Food for Less, and raffles drew our families in. We had about 40 participants each week, and we taught that we had guest speakers come in each week, and we taught the classes in Spanish. We did one on basic family health, preventable diseases, primarily focusing on diabetes and hypertension. We did something on childhood obesity. We did a nutrition class. One of our WIC dietitians went up and did a hands-on cooking nutrition class with the families. We had someone come up and do an exercise program, just showing families exercise they can do that didn't take work or money, just fun things they could do with their family. And then we had a local panel of resources available for families in the community. And the programs were very well received. As a result of those programs, we identified four women who were leaders in the community. And we partnered with French Hospital. French Hospital has a community educator, a bilingual community educator, and she and Vanessa, our health educator, took the four women and gave them intensive training. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Promotoras programs before, but they're peer educator programs. So we took the four women, did intensive training on diabetes, cancer, and healthy living choices. And we gave a $25 certificate to the women after they completed the training. And now the women are doing outreach to their peers. And they have to reach 45 of their friends and teach each one of these friends one thing. So, and then they come back to us, they keep a log of who they taught what to, and then we're going to give them an additional $50. So it's a way to kind of take the information and get it out to the community, and it's passed along by people that they trust. So it was a great project. We're in the outreach stage right now. Another one of the pilot projects we did is we teamed up with Master Gardeners. I don't know how many of you know Master Gardeners, but we had such success at the school gardens in Oceano and San Miguel. So we did a mini grant application, and we just recently distributed up to $500 to seven schools in the county. And it just happened to work out well that geographically we've got almost everybody covered and we've got all the age groups covered. And so we're out in the community now, and the neat partnership with Master Gardeners is Master Gardeners is going to assign one of their Master Gardeners to be an expert, and will work with the teachers at the schools and try and help them develop their community garden. Another pilot project we did with our money, we paired with the County Office of Education. We decided to do a poster project. It's a messaging campaign. And a student at Cal Poly developed these four posters. Each poster will go out about every 2 months, 2 to 3 months this year. We're sending out a new poster. The fourth is to have county when we had a and then oh. I was at computers. Pure earning potential. to only you know, Santa that she rules. You're trying to on attends. Problems along. Let's see things. And if you can design the community and the built So wouldn't hurt. Money to get.
Holly. If we're going to it could
When you go to your it's the people that food. Doesn't like that. On camp. Reward. record. It's not. A whole and they were. our can grow and seaweed. Experiments. The reasons been tried physical activity. Has a we have to Okay. Putting having personal. Watching again. Have to make sure opportunities. Money. To the school. One example. environment is. How do you not really.
State of California.
The preschool.
Councils will
of the health going out to
Christina.
One of the things
is, yeah.
From Jeanette.
We
yeah. Might be an get.
In her feeling. Commission. Of us. Enumerated. Participate.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that's
agencies. Set to okay. Do I?